You know, if this were a couple years ago, this room probably would be filled. But as the pandemic threat perhaps has receded from our consciousness, it's important to recognize that the threat itself hasn't gone away. And we've made a lot of progress over the past couple years in terms of our pandemic planning and preparedness. Just with a quick show of hands, who out there does pandemic planning? Any of you work on planning at State? So a lot of this audience. And so as a pandemic planner, let me just tell you what I take from that last presentation that we heard. And that is, we're not exactly sure what vaccine we're going to use in a pandemic. And depending on the vaccine, it may take a whole lot of antigen in order to immunize somebody, which means we won't have very much vaccine at the time of a pandemic. Or what we also heard is that there are some new technologies, there are some new adjuvants that may allow us to decrease the amount of antigen in every dose, and therefore we may have a lot of vaccine. So whatever plans we develop have to be robust and have to be appropriate for any of those situations. And as we developed our national guidance on prioritizing pandemic influenza vaccine, this was one of the key issues that we had to face, that there may be a lot of vaccine out there, or there may not be very much, and that's really a critical issue. So what I'd like to do is talk a little bit about how we got to the prioritization strategy and exactly what that strategy is, and then I'm going to end this presentation with a couple very quick comments on implementation, which I know is a main concern of many of you. So in terms of the background, we're going to talk about why prioritize pandemic vaccine and then the 2005 ACIP and NVAC process. I'll describe the proposed prioritization strategy, and we'll just touch on implementation. Now, I think we all appreciate the need to prioritize pandemic influenza vaccine. In a pandemic, we assume that the virus that causes the pandemic will be one that we have had no experience with previously, and therefore everybody will be susceptible to getting disease. Currently, it takes a minimum of about 20 weeks from the time the manufacturers get the vaccine reference strain until the first doses of vaccine roll off the production line and are sent out to you to administer. Currently, our US-based vaccine production capacity is not sufficient to make enough vaccine so that everybody can be vaccinated at the same time, and therefore we need to target who gets vaccine earlier and who gets vaccine later in order to best accomplish our pandemic response goals. Now, we're not just accepting this situation. HHS has invested over $1 billion to increase our production capacity and to develop and license new vaccine production technologies that will increase our surge capacity and decrease the amount of time we need to make the vaccine, and also, as you just heard, to evaluate new adjuvants that may allow us to make many more doses with the available production capacity. But how soon pandemic vaccine is available relative to when community outbreaks begin and how much vaccine will be available at that time is unknown. In 2005, HHS made its first effort in terms of prioritizing pandemic vaccine, and these results were published in the HHS pandemic plan. The work was done jointly by two HHS vaccine advisory committees, and the process they went through included consideration of the vaccine supply and efficacy, the impact of past pandemics by the age and risk groups of who becomes infected, and then they also considered a variety of ethical issues. These recommendations were included in the plan as guidance for state and local planning and to promote further discussions, but nowhere did we say that this was going to be the final plan, and that's definitely what folks have to do. The recommendations looked a lot like this, and in fact, they were this. Vaccination was given by tiers, so it began with tier 1, 2, 3, and 4. And if vaccine supply was not adequate to vaccinate the entire tier at once, within tier 1, there were 4 different sub-tiers, and so you'd go 1A, 1B, 1C, etc. If you look at the groups that are included here, it looks a lot like our recommendations for annual vaccination. So we would vaccinate healthcare workers, We would vaccinate highest risk groups. We would vaccinate household contacts of young infants, immunocompromised people and pregnant women. And then we would vaccinate some key government leaders and pandemic responders in Tier 1D. We would then go to the rest of the high-risk population. And indeed, it wouldn't be until we had vaccinated 100 million people, one-third of the U.S. population, that we would begin to vaccinate our critical infrastructure personnel, those who would be essential to keeping the electricity on and the water, et cetera. And so again, looks a lot like our annual vaccine recommendations. Shortly after this guidance was made available, there was some evolution in our pandemic planning assumptions. Whereas ACIP and NVAC had been planning for a moderate pandemic, something that maybe looks like 1957, our national planning assumptions were to plan for a severe pandemic, something that would be extrapolated from 1918. And unlike the assumptions that were used by ACIP and NVAC, we would assume that absenteeism would be high, both because of illness that workers would experience, as well as people staying home because of fear of going to work. We also had results from a number of public engagement meetings, and the public participants at those meetings emphasized that for them, preserving essential services ranked as the top goal for vaccination over protecting high-risk individuals. And then finally, an analysis of critical infrastructure, which was done by the Department of Homeland Security's National Infrastructure Advisory Council, identified workers within critical infrastructure sectors who were important to protect in order to maintain those essential community services. Given that rationale for a reconsideration, we established an interagency working group that considered, again, pandemic vaccination priorities. This working group looked at the prior ACIP and NVAC recommendations, considered a range of scientific, public health, and ethical issues. We looked at the analysis and the recommendations on critical infrastructure that NIAC came out with. And we heard presentations by national and homeland security experts. We held several public engagement meetings and a stakeholders meeting, conducted a formal decision analysis along with colleagues from California, and reviewed a number of comments that were submitted in response to a Federal Register notice. I'm going to show you data from a couple parts of this process that I think are particularly important in understanding the prioritization strategy that we propose. And shown here are the recommendations from the National Infrastructure Advisory Council. And probably you can't read the specifics out there, but you can see that there's the blue section, the light blue section of the pie, which represents healthcare out of this, this critical infrastructure pie. The other largest segment of this in pink is emergency services. So that's police, fire, and EMS. And the other critical infrastructure sectors, sectors like electricity, water, nuclear energy, oil and gas, et cetera, a relatively small number of workers would be essential to maintaining those services in a pandemic, perhaps several million as you aggregate across those sectors. We also held public engagement and stakeholders meetings, and the objective from these meetings was to consider the potential goals of pandemic vaccination and to assign values to each of these goals. What we did was we began with a number of background presentations. We then had group discussions and then a process of electronic voting where all of the participants voted on the importance, rated the importance of 10 different potential goals for our vaccination program. We held one of the public meetings in Las Cruces, New Mexico, and there were 108 people who participated. And this was a very culturally diverse group. We had simultaneous translation into Spanish. We had a number of these small group tables that were made up of wives of farm workers. And I don't know whether they were documented or undocumented, But clearly, it was not a group that had particular interest or expertise in pandemic influenza. Our other meeting was in Nassau County, New York, and there were 130 participants, and over a third of them were older adults, over age 65. And as you can imagine, in Long Island, the demographics are very different from the demographics in Las Cruces. This was primarily a white population and pretty affluent. And then our third meeting was in Washington, D.C., and it included stakeholders, representatives from government, critical infrastructure, and community organizations, and about 90 individuals participated in that meeting. The results of the ratings that they gave us are shown on this slide. And so they indicated the importance of each of these objectives on a 7-point scale, with 7 being extremely important and 1 being not at all important. And the values that rated highest are shown in red. And 4 of them came out on top of all 3 meetings. They were to use our pandemic vaccine in order to protect people who are fighting the pandemic and providing health care. This would be our public health and health care workers. To protect people who provide essential community services, to protect those who are vulnerable due to their jobs, and to protect children. And protecting children was particularly interesting and ranked 2nd in each of the public health meetings. And clearly, the reason why people thought this was important was because of the value that they have in protecting children. By contrast, if you look at the elderly and those who are immunocompromised, those who we target for annual vaccination, if you go down the list to the 7th of the objectives in rank order, those who are most likely to get sick or die, it is lower on the list than children. And more than one grandparent got up in these meetings and said that if I had a dose of pandemic vaccine, I would prefer you give it to my grandchild. And this was a revelation. This really changed how we thought about pandemic vaccine prioritization. The other revelation I have to share from these meetings was how similar the values were between the individuals in Las Cruces and in Long Island. And despite the differences in location, the differences in ethnicity, and the differences in socioeconomic status, the values that we saw were very similar. And that really sent us a powerful message about what we should target our pandemic vaccine in order to achieve. And so what we did was we developed a system in some ways similar to the ACIP and NVAC system, where vaccination would be administered in tiers, with people designated in Tier 1 getting vaccinated first, followed by Tier 2, Tier 3, 4, and 5. And at the end of Tier 5, everybody in this country will have had the opportunity to be vaccinated. So the question is not if you'll get vaccinated, the question is where you stand in line. The strategy for vaccination includes a number of different groups being targeted. And these groups, these population groups, are categorized into 4 different categories. Those occupations that protect our homeland and national security, those that provide healthcare and community support services, those supporting critical infrastructure, and then the general population. In the colors, in the right 3 columns, we have different prioritization strategies for severe, moderate, and less severe pandemics based on the Pandemic Severity Index, which is in the CDC Community Mitigation Guidance. And then the tiers are shown in the different colors. Red would be Tier 1, orange Tier 2, yellow Tier 3, etc. And let me just highlight a few things here. First of all, each of the 4 categories has people prioritized in Tier 1. And this is what we heard from the public, that it's not enough just to target certain groups, certain occupations on top. But rather, there are many goals that we need to accomplish with our vaccination program. And therefore, we have to balance the use of vaccine between those who perform critical functions and those who are vulnerable or at high risk. So that the first tier includes our deployed military forces, those who are in Iraq and Afghanistan, for example. It includes healthcare workers in inpatient and outpatient, as well as public health services. It includes police, fire, and EMS in the critical infrastructure category, and it includes pregnant women, infants, and toddlers. So again, it balances the use of vaccine in these different categories in order to achieve multiple goals. You can also see that tier one for vaccination is the same, regardless of whether the pandemic is severe, moderate, or less severe. But as you go to a less severe pandemic, fewer occupationally defined groups need to be vaccinated because critical infrastructures, essential services, will not be threatened by less severe pandemics. In 1957 or 1968, for example, we did not see that our public services collapsed. So as the severity of the pandemic goes down, targeting groups because of their occupation also decreases, so that those in the general population will be vaccinated sooner. What I just showed you was the draft guidance that we released in October of last year. And following release of this draft guidance, we vetted it with the public and with stakeholders through presentations that we made to ACIP and NVAC, a second set of public meetings in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and in Hendersonville, North Carolina. We had another stakeholders meeting. We conducted a web dialogue. This was the first time ever that HHS has had a web dialogue to obtain comment on public policy, and then issued the standard request for comments in the Federal Register and at the HHS website. We got a number of suggestions from this vetting process. First, there was strong support that was expressed for the goals and values that underlie the plan. And again, I was not surprised given the strong goals and values that we had heard from the first meetings. There was strong support for prioritizing children before older adults, and then there also was support for the structure of the guidance overall. In addition, there were some specific comments of things we should change. They suggested targeting pharmacists and mortuary services higher than we had. They suggested targeting financial clearing and settlement services because this is what keeps the cash supply and people's paychecks coming. Interestingly, the strongest suggestion that was made was to move government leaders who don't have high-risk contacts out of tier one into where they belong in the general population. And we are going to do this. We'll see if the government lets us get away with that. And there also were many suggestions that we should prioritize healthy adults before the ill and the elderly. And I believe we are not going to accept that suggestion, although we will certainly comment in the guidance about how it's important to understand the epidemiology of disease. And if we see a situation like we had in 1918, where young adults are at higher risk than the elderly, we would certainly modify our planning and shift the priority between younger adults and the elderly. Implementation is going to be a particular challenge, and it's a challenge that I know many of you are going to face. We are proposing that most of the vaccine be allocated and distributed to states. That's not a surprise. We also suggest that states are strongly encouraged to follow this national guidance. And there are a number of reasons why. First, having different state plans would cause confusion, it would complicate communication, and it would interfere with efforts to protect essential services. In addition, our prioritization guidance gives states some flexibility to address their local needs so that we hope that all states will follow this national guidance. And indeed, in talking with state health officials, most of them recognize the value of uniformity across the states. We are currently working on developing guidance on implementation in an interagency working group that is being co-led by CDC and the Department of Homeland Security. And in my final slide, I'd like to give you a little bit of a preview of the discussions that are ongoing in that working group. First, in terms of state and local planning, there is discussion about the receipt and distribution of vaccine, and I know most state plans are pretty strong on that already. Discussion on the strategy for vaccination of the general population. Will people need to validate what priority group they're in? And I think the feeling of the work group is that they will not. And then approaches to monitoring, and that's also an issue that CDC and I know the states are working on. In terms of federal roles, the assumption is that the Department of Defense will vaccinate military personnel and We are considering having all federal employees vaccinated at VA facilities. So this would take them out of the group that is vaccinated by states and put them into a parallel process. And then federal role also in vaccine safety monitoring. Now here's the big one. Here's the real difficulty. What do we do in terms of vaccination of critical infrastructure workers? How do we identify who those workers are? How do we validate when someone comes to a vaccination clinic and says, I'm in the priority group from the electric company? How do we vaccinate them and monitor them? And that's all to be determined. And I'd be interested if anyone has particularly good suggestions for how we might want to do that. So thank you very much, and I'd be glad to take questions if we have time afterwards.